Some years ago, during my student days, I was traveling in Germany in the summertime and had gone to that beautiful part of the Bavarian Alps around Berchtesgaden and the Königssee, and wanted to go and visit where Hitler had had his old haunt at Adler Eyrie, the Eagle's Nest. The only tour that I could get up there was on a German bus with a German tour guide, and my German was not that good. But fortunately, I was seated beside an elderly German woman who was also making the pilgrimage to Hitler's old haunts. And she very patiently explained to me some of the things about those old days with Hitler and corrected my German along the way. I remember one basic grammar lesson she gave me. I called Hitler bad in German. She corrected it to evil. She told me as we had returned from that site, beautiful site up there at the top of the Bavarian Alps, looking down over the lakes below and the beautiful high peaks, that the reason she had decided to go, first time she had ever been in her life, was because she felt it necessary to return there with all of its past associations. To put it in her words, to see that the madness was really over. I think that's what the point of the Gerasene demoniac is in its greatest depths. A journey backwards. A journey home for him. To the past, to see that the madness is really a thing of the past. You're familiar with the story, but let's read it once again. It's found in the 5th chapter of Mark, verses 1 through 20. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when he had come out of the boat, there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who lived among the tombs. And no one could bind him any more, even with a chain, for he had often been bound with fetters and chains. But the chains he wrenched apart, and the fetters he broke in pieces, and no one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and bruising himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshipped him, and crying out with a loud voice, said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he had said to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged him eagerly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of swine was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, "Send us to the swine, let us enter them." So he gave leave, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the swine, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and saw the demoniac sitting there clothed and in his right mind, the man who had had the legion, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it told what had happened to the demoniac and to the swine, and they began to beg Jesus to depart from their neighborhood. And as he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. But he refused and said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all men marveled. We might say that the problems of this passage are legion. For one thing, we do not know what to even call this man. Is he the Gerasene demoniac or the Gadarene demoniac or the Gergesene demoniac? The ancient copyists weren't too sure. And what, after all, should we do with that strange name that he gives himself? We are legion. Is this perhaps a mistranslation of an original Aramaic word that meant soldier? I'm a soldier, I'm a fighter. Watch your step. Or was it perhaps a veiled threat on the part of the demons? We are powerful, we are strong, like a Roman legion. You'd better look out if you mess with us. Or was this an extreme case of schizophrenia? The 2001 Faces of Eve, if you please. And what do you do with the pigs? They've caused us no end of problems. I think I once counted nearly 20 different interpretations that had been given to solve the problem of the pigs. One of the favorite, of course, is that Jesus was punishing these herdsmen because they were, after all, Jewish herdsmen. And they were engaged in illegal herding of unclean animals that they were selling on the Gentile black market. Or is John Calvin correct? Jesus was testing their faith to see if they placed greater value on swine or human souls. Or is perhaps that German interpreter right, who says that we fail to catch the basic point that pigs, after all, are excellent swimmers? And in ancient lore, you know, the one certain way to kill a demon, to extinguish him forever, was to drown him, to submerge him in water. Ergo, the demons were drowned, the pigs swam safely to shore. Unfortunately, Mark was evidently not apprised of that fact, for he certainly wrote as if he believed that the pigs were destroyed in the water. Well, these problems and many others aside, there are many preaching themes in this story. We could concentrate on almost any one of the main characters and have a tremendous sermon. For instance, we could start with the swine. For all the problems that they create us, there is one basic truth being illustrated by these swine. They ask Jesus to give them a little room. Don't completely drive us out. Don't destroy us. Send us into that herd of swine. And Mark says Jesus let them do what they wished. He permitted them. And when they chose their own way, the swine rushed into the water and destroyed the demons. The demonic, when left to itself, has a way of destroying itself. Or we could look at the exorcist, at Jesus. He who was unafraid of this one who terrorized the community so, who reached out and accepted him, the compassion of this one who reached out to the real outcasts of society. Or we could look at the herdsmen. The herdsmen, with all their fear and their anger over their economic loss, asking the disturber of their community to get out. We don't want your kind of person around here. But the real central character of our story is the demoniac himself. And it's the demoniac I'd like for us to concentrate on this morning, and the story of his pilgrimage, back home, home from the tombs, home to the land of the living. The tombs are almost symbolic, for this man was as good as dead, chained to the tombs because he was completely useless to society and a danger even to his own self. Good as dead as far as the community was concerned. And the story of his encounter with Jesus is the story of his return home from the tombs to the realm of the living. It's a journey that begins, first of all, with his return home to God. In his encounter with Jesus, he is restored to a new relationship with God. I used to always begin with the man himself, for after all, it seemed to me that's where the basic problem lay. If this man was to have any meaningful relationship with anybody, he had to be put back together. He had to learn to relate to himself and to accept himself. He was completely useless to society and completely alienated with his community. Evidently, he had so terrorized it in the extreme form of his mental distress that they had relegated him to the first century equivalent of the isolation ward, the tombs. Not many people spent much time among the tombs. Though in the tombs he was not as threatening to the community, he was still threatening to himself. And he shrieked and ranted and raved and tore about, ripping the chains from himself, tearing his flesh with their sharpness, and bruising himself against the stones. There was an extreme self-destructiveness and self-rejection in his whole pattern of behavior. So it would seem natural that we begin with him. How could he possibly have any restoration to anyone until he had been restored to himself and gotten it all back together again? It would seem we should begin with the demoniac. But no, Mark does not begin with the demoniac. Mark begins with the encounter with Jesus. The divine encounter is first. It is Jesus who starts the story off, coming across the water, landing in the land of the Gadarenes or Gerasenes or whoever they were. And the demoniac comes to him, shrieking from the tombs. Unlike others, who always fled his presence, who were terrorized at the unknown quality of his distress, Jesus did not flee in terror, but came forth to him, reached out to him, engaged him in conversation, accepted him, and confronted him with that basic crisis of identity that it was at the very heart of his problem. What is your name? My name? My name is Legion, for we are many, 2,000, the fragmented self, the tormented self. Do not torment us any further. And in that confrontation, the man miraculously finds healing in this one who reaches out to him, who restores him to himself, this self-rejecting demoniac bruising himself among the tombs. When the townsfolk come, they find the man seated, no longer in shredded clothes he had ripped apart, but in a clean new garment, and as Mark says, in his right mind. He has it all together again. He only has it together again because he has had an encounter with the one who brings wholeness. Because he has been restored to his relationship with God, and that is prior to his being put back in touch with himself. Isn't that really what the message of grace is all about? This one who had been so utterly, psychotically self-rejecting with his suicidal tendencies trying to destroy himself, isn't it only because Jesus reaches out and accepts him that he finally at last is able to accept himself? Isn't that what the miracle of grace is all about? That in God's love and acceptance of us, we come to find our true being and our true worth and our acceptance of ourselves. One of Paul Tillich's profoundest statements was that grace is learning to accept God's acceptance of you. That's the way it was with the Gerasene demoniac. He learned to accept himself and to come home to himself because he had found the acceptance of Jesus. And that's the way it is with all us demoniacs. Oh, we're not in the extreme distraught cases of this Gerasene demoniac, but we have our own demons, and we have our own insecurities that immobilize us. We have our own self-rejecting patterns that keep us from being the sort of people in our deepest we want to be. The same kind of worrying about ourself that cuts us off from true openness to other people. We have the same self-rejecting ways as the Gerasene demoniac, the same demons in a lesser way possess us all. And in the same encounter with Jesus, we find wholeness, we find acceptance, we find a new estimate of ourselves and what we are and what we can be in our relationship with Him as we are put in touch with our Creator, and we learn what He made us to be, and we are free to be. I was recently talking to a church member in a local congregation in Washington, D.C., who happened to be a psychologist. And he was telling me, in reference to some of these demon stories of Mark, he said, there's a profound truth in them, you know. He said, a high percentage of the people who come to me with all of their many problems that are tearing at their lives have one basic need that, he said, I suppose I could put very piously. It's a need for a Savior. Their need is religious. And I can go through all the clinical rigmarole, but in the depths of their being, their problem is religious. They need a Savior. Do we need to be told that? We who have the message of divine grace and who are able to say to others, man, you are not left alone with the demons of your life. Man, you have one who accepts and reaches out to you and frees you from that endless preoccupation with self. One who frees you to be your true self, and one who frees you for true relationship with others. And isn't that where it finally ends up? It ends up back home with others. And that's the story of the Gerasene demoniac's pilgrimage. It ends up back home in community with others. It wasn't an easy return home for the Gerasene demoniac. It was a very difficult pilgrimage. When the herdsman gave the word back in the community of what had happened to him, everyone came out to see. They saw him seated there in his right mind. And they saw Jesus, the destroyer of their herd, standing close by. They did not rejoice at the healing of this one who had been so distraught and separated from them. Their immediate reaction was to turn to Jesus and say, get out of here. We're afraid of your kind. We don't want your kind around here. Go. The demoniac would not have been too far astray had he taken this as a direct rejection of himself. To reject the one who had healed him, who had given him his wholeness and his life, was in a real sense to reject him. So his reaction was natural enough. Lord, let me be with you. Let me get into the boat and follow you and leave these people forever. They don't rejoice with me. They don't accept me. They're the ones who chained me to the tombs in the first place. My future, Lord, is with you, and I'll go to the ends of the earth with you, and I'll bear my testimony with you. There's no future here. And you'll remember Jesus' answer. He didn't see it that way. No, son, go home. Go home and tell all your friends about what the Lord has done for you and what mercy He has shown upon you. Go home. Go home. Home was the place with all the old associations. Home was the place where he was known as Old Mad Willie. Home was the place that was the very matrix that had produced his sickness in the first place. It was the most difficult place he could go. So much easier to follow after Jesus, the one to whom he owed everything, to hit the glory trail. But Jesus said, go home. For Jesus knew that he had to go home. For only at home, in the community, where all the pain and suffering had been, could he really finally and certainly be sure that it was a thing of the past and that he was really whole in his encounter with Jesus. And to go home, as Jesus pointed out, among those who had known him as he was, he would bear the greatest witness as they could see him as he was now. Go home. It's a difficult thing, isn't it? But it's where our journey ultimately takes us. The old German woman showed a great deal of insight in wanting to go back to Eagle Eyrie, to go back to a place where she would find an association that had always in her mind been with Hitler, to go to the top of that peak in his own little private elevator where Hitler and his cohorts had plotted the taking of Europe, to hear in the back of her mind the shrieking of his demagoguery. She needed to associate herself with that and to stand there in the cool breeze of that Bavarian Alp and realize that the shrieking was no longer there. And the demagoguery was a thing of the past, and the voices of the demons were silent, and all she could hear was the whisper of the cool summer breeze. She needed to go back to the past to be sure that the past was a thing of the past, that the madness was over. And isn't it that way with us? There are times when in our own experience, each one of us needs to go back to the past to make sure that the demons are really gone. It may be upon our first encounter with Jesus, who has restored us in that definitive encounter to wholeness with ourselves and relationship with him. Or it may be along that constant pilgrimage that we have all of our Christian life long, where we let the little demons slip in again and again and again, and we renew our relationship with him, and he exorcises them from our life, and we need to go back to the broken relationships that the demons created. Back to seek reconciliation, back to deal realistically with the past and the hurts. And it isn't easy. For some of us, it may even be going back to those who do not share our Lord, the one who has brought wholeness to us, but reject him as flatly as those herdsmen rejected Jesus. But it's a necessary pilgrimage for us if we are really to be sure that the demons are a thing of the past in our life. And who knows? In the final weighing of it all, we may find that that place back home again is where we will bear our most profound witness of what the Lord has done in us.